ShareCare is the leading online health and wellness engagement platform, providing millions of consumers with a personal, results-oriented experience by connecting them to the most qualified health resources and programs they need to improve their health. It's time now for ShareCare Radio on RadioMD.com. Here's your host, Dr. Daria.
Hi, and welcome to ShareCare Radio. I'm Dr. Daria Long-Gillespie, Head of Clinical Strategy at ShareCare, making sure that the information we give you is the best health information out there today. I'm an ER doctor at Emory Hospital, and I often talk about all things health on CNBC, Fox News, and the Dr. Oz Show. I'm also a national spokesperson for the American College of Emergency Physicians. Join me every week from 12 to 1 as we break down the top health news. I'll pull in experts from everywhere around the country, from Sanjay Gupta to Dr. Mike Roizen to Dr. Oz. We'll answer all your questions on how to be your healthiest, happiest you. Speaking of which, 2004 was a year of breaking news, exciting trends, and sometimes even some scary headlines for health and healthcare. Obamacare hit its one-year mark. E-cigarettes caused controversy in drugstores nationwide, and the Ebola outbreak hit devastatingly close to home, especially for those of us here in Atlanta. 2015 promises to be just as exciting, and many of these topics, as well as new and exciting health trends, continue to hold doctors and the public's interest. Joining me today to talk about our predictions for the biggest health trends of 2015 is Dr. Mehmet Oz. Dr. Oz is the perfect guest for this segment. A renowned heart surgeon, he hosts the extremely popular Emmy Award-winning Dr. Oz Show. He's launched his own Healthy Living magazine and regularly appears as a medical expert on television, radio, and news programs all over the world. He also somehow finds time to continue as vice chairman and professor of surgery at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, Dr. Oz. As one of the top health and medical experts in the country, I wanted to talk about some of the top health trends that we're seeing. One of those we wanted to talk about first was superbugs. And the U.S. is predicting that every year 23,000 people are going to be killed by superbugs in the country. What are you seeing amongst your patients and your viewers, and what are you telling them about these?
Well, Dr. Daria, thanks for making all this possible, bringing all this wonderful information to your listeners. And the opportunity to talk about sewer bugs is not just one of, you know, fascination and how these things come about, but it's also a national security issue. In fact, the leadership of Great Britain has declared that it is the number one thing they fear most as a nation. Are these super bugs. And it's not just terroristic use of them. It's the fact that they're available now in small communities. I remember the first time I was exposed to this widening range of super bugs, because we all knew super bugs only in the context of sick people in a hospital. Because you give people who are getting chemotherapy or heart transplants, antibiotics for weeks on end, you'll develop some resistance to those antibiotics. That's to be expected. It's called the Queen Anne theory, actually. The concept is that the bacteria reproduce much more rapidly than we ever would. Because humans only make a new baby every, you know, couple of years, and, you know, we only have a generation of, you know, 25 years long, whereas superbugs will do it every few minutes sometimes. So not surprising they'll build up resistance, but we are now in a scenario where communities, kids playing in a camp are getting superbugs. And I remember running into a kid like that about 10 years ago and realizing after some research that it is now endemic in our communities.
It's true. And I have patients and kids coming in that normally would think they would never be susceptible to superbugs. And we're having to give them really strong antibiotics because they have this resistance in their infections.
The catch, of course, is what are you going to do about it? And I think it's a multi-pronged approach. Part of it is reminding all of us that we have to invest in antibiotics. In the pre-antibiotic world, which most of us don't remember, it was a whole different world if you got pneumonia or an infection of your bone. I mean, you're probably going to die. In fact, pneumonia was called an old man's best friend. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we don't live in that world anymore. Now we feel very comfortable. But if we can get companies to feel incentivized to start researching antibiotics, we haven't had new generations of antibiotics for these kinds of problems in a while. Or we're just more clever about how we create resistance in antibiotics. For example, we're using probably 80 to 85% of all of our antibiotics for animal care. And there's some defensible reasons for it, but there's sometimes you probably overuse it. Most regulatory bodies sort of agree that we're overusing it. But bringing those numbers down, allowing us to at least clean up some of the areas that are a little easier to bring safety back into our communities is probably a wise investment.
Yeah, I agree. So the use in livestock and the use just used so widely. What do you feel about what's being done to survey how often we're giving antibiotics and making sure that we're prescribing them appropriately?
Well, within hospitals, I think it's pretty good. In most institutions, you have to get permission from someone who's really knowledgeable on antibiotics, an infectious disease specialist, before you give the more broad-range antibiotics. But in the community, listen, the average mom has a kid who's got a little cough, and they're worried it's an infection, and they want something done now. Like we all do as parents, you want some intervention done. So you go in there to the doctor's office, and you browbeat the fellow till they give you what you sort of desired. And everyone knows the game. Doctors realize it doesn't work that well. Parents probably appreciate it doesn't work as much as they would hope. But you feel good because you're doing something. In fact, you're hurting your child sometimes because you're breeding resistant bacteria in them. You're actually hurting their intestinal flora. And if we can get that message across, and we spend a lot of time on the show trying to make these points, it's probably better for the entire community.
It's so true. And not to mention every antibiotic, it has a broad array of side effects, some of them including things like heart arrhythmias. So these aren't just safe medications. They are medicine. And we have to be good stewards of that.
Well, Dr. Derry, as you know, anything that's powerful enough to help you is powerful enough to hurt you, too. So you ought to keep that in mind.
Is there anything you specifically advise people in the general public to do? Obviously, be careful about using antibiotics only when prescribed. And what about taking the full course?
Well, the full course arguments have been debated. We used to always say you got to take 7 days or 10 days of an antibiotic. For some of the more common problems, the major medical societies are now saying, maybe you just want 3 days. We don't have to knock everything out of your system. Just beat the thing back so your body catches up and can take it down. So for some of the upper respiratory infections, 3 days is probably enough. It's worth having a conversation, especially if you've got a kid, because your pediatricians will be well versed on this. But we're starting to pull back as a field on the dogma that you need to get, a long course. Of course, once you start whatever the right course is, please stay on that. If it's 3 days or 5 days or 7 or whatever.
That's a great point. Take it exactly however it's prescribed. So moving from kind of acute instances of needing antibiotics more to preventive care, 75% of all of our U.S. spending goes to treating chronic conditions. What's your opinion on the impact of chronic disease, and how do you talk to your viewers and patients about it?
There's a big debate in America about Obamacare, and half the country thinks it's a good thing, half thinks it's bad. The reality is, if we don't deal with chronic illnesses, in particular the ones caused by obesity in America, then no healthcare plan is going to work. And if we deal with obesity and related chronic illnesses, then all the healthcare plans would work. So that we actually control our destiny, and we can get away from the political dogma to figure this out. I do believe that for the first time, we're beginning to appreciate the limitations of traditional Western medicine, which is great at acutely taking care of people who are dying of a heart attack, but not so good at getting folks to realize that there are things they could do in their own homes, because it's softer science. It's hard to sort of prove that without a shadow of a doubt. But the rational approach to losing weight, which generally speaking consists of recognizing the dangers of carbohydrates, simple sugars in particular, appreciating the importance of just moving at any level, fidgeting, walking, you don't have to go run marathons, but these kinds of activities dramatically change the incidence of chronic disease and put the locus of control back in our laps.
It's so true. And you're right. It's about patient empowerment and realizing that it's not just what their doctor can do for them in terms of a pill, but it's really in terms of what they can do for themselves, with what they eat and what they do with their activity.
Well, the chronic illnesses that we all worry about the most are the ones that we actually have the most control over. The good news is within 3 months or so of changing your lifestyle, you shift your life expectancy curve and your chronic illness profile begins to shift in a healthier way as well. So feel good about that, everybody.
Yeah, I agree. There's really so much that patients can really do for themselves. In addition to the few minutes of time they spend with their doctor, they're really in control. So really helpful, and hopefully this year we'll see patients and consumers even more in control with use of smartphones and devices. It could be some really exciting things. Thank you so much for the fascinating conversation, but unfortunately, we have to take a break. We'll continue when we come back with more 2015 health trends. This is Dr. Daria, and you're listening to ShareCare Radio. Thanks for listening, and stay well.